Begin our service with the opening hymn, printed in the light blue order of service, which you'll find in your hymnals. Please stand in body or spirit. Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Winona. My name is John Chernega. I've been a member for about 5 years, and I serve on the Sunday Service Committee. If you're new to our Sunday Fellowship, we especially welcome you, and we hope you enjoy our service and find yourselves challenged, and that part's not on the list anymore. But we hope you enjoy the service. We especially welcome you. And we invite you to stay for coffee and conversation. Are there any introductions by our greeter or anyone who'd like to introduce themselves?
Fred. Yeah, I'm Fred Foss. I go back a long time in Unitarian Winona history. I was chairman way back when we were at the Red Cross building. That's a long time ago. And down in the Art Center. And then we met in the houses, and then we just kind of dwindled away. But then the same time that we dwindled away, the Keeneys came to town, and they wanted to start a Unitarian group. So with about a month hiatus there, we've had Unitarians going way, way back. Later on, I'd like to say something about the Camp Unistar, which my family and I have gone to for 43 years. It's a Unitarian camp in northern Minnesota, and I put some information back on the table, and now I don't have to say anything more about okay. Camp Unistar.
Well, welcome back. Thank you. The only announcements I have for this morning are the schedule for this week and next week. This week we're going to be talking about spiritual and physical healing. Originally in the program we've got Catherine Strongstaline, who was not able to make it, and Jean Lauer graciously stepped up and was able to join us today. So we definitely appreciate that. And then Jade Fang is also going to be part of the panel talking about healing today. For next week, Laura Krall will talk about healing and the spiritual properties of herbal medicine, and Jim Armstrong will coordinate. At this time, we will affirm our community by saying together the chalice reading as printed in the order of service. We have come together today. Now is the time to make this our place. We are Unitarian Universalists. We like this chalice. It is our symbol. It represents all of the important things which make us who we are and which hold us together. Let us create our space together and make for ourselves a safe place to grow and learn and to be fully who we are. Please stand while we sing number 128 in the hymnal. I invite you now to place a shell in the water in celebration of or in concern for a person or an event in your life that we may share in your joy or give you comfort in your sorrow.
Well, I'm glad to be here because that means that Cliff was doing pretty well and open heart surgery was a breeze.
Happy Chinese New Year.
In memory of Pete Seeger.
No, you don't put it in. Pick one out and put it in the water. That's okay. Pick one in. Can you pick a pretty one? We'll put one in like that. And a week ago Friday,
it was a special day. Lily got up and got out of bed. She said, I woke up and got out of bed, and I was three.
This is for our friend Dave, who's having surgery tomorrow. go to repair a bicep, and he's a weightlifter guy, so it's going to be really hard on him to not move his arm or lift anything for 12 weeks.
We finished the fourth book of Harry Potter.
And then I'll put a shell in for Dylan Farrell.
We will now take a moment of silence for these concerns and joys, both spoken and unspoken. Will all the children please come forward for today's story? Thank you. The offertory basket allows us to be good stewards of this fellowship. Please feel free to give either a portion of your pledge, so marked, or an additional offering if you so desire. Today's story is Grumpy Goat. Sunny Acres was one of the friendliest little farms in the country until the day that Grumpy Goat arrived. When the pigs invited the goat to play, Goat chased them off. Cow came to say hello. She left quickly. The sheep just stayed away. Goat never looked up at the blooming flowers or the green leaves. Or the bright sky. He never noticed the cool breeze or the warm sun. He just kept his head down, scowled, and ate. He kicked down the garden fence and kept eating. After finishing the cherries on the orchard, Goat kept going. But at the... Yeah, old MacDonald had a goat too. But at the top of Sunrise Hill, Goat stopped. What he saw reminded him of something. What's this? He couldn't think what it was. But he sat still, and he watched it for a while. You know what that is?
Yeah.
What kind of flower is that yellow one?
A dandelion.
That's right, a dandelion. Goat noticed that the ground was getting a little dry. He got some water, and then very carefully trimmed the grass. Goat came back the next day, and the day after that, he watered and trimmed. He sat and watched. Yeah? One curious sheep climbed halfway up the hill. Goat eyed her suspiciously, but didn't chase her away. Do you see this one? What animal is that?
A cow.
That's right, a cow. The next day, cow wandered by. Goat let her help trim the grass. The day after that, the pigs dropped in for a game of tag.
That's cool.
Each evening, Goat lay down to sleep on the top of the hill. Each morning, he woke up looking forward to seeing his friends again. Until one day, a breeze began to blow. There was nothing Goat could do. His dandelions scattered all over. The pigs came by. Goat did not feel like playing, so they sat with him for a while. Cow brought some nice hay, but Goat wasn't hungry. The sheep didn't know what to do, so they stayed nearby. Goat spent long, lonely days and chilly nights on the top of the hill, but his friends stayed close and visited often, until one day. It's back, but not only one, a whole field of dandelions. All summer long, Goat was happy to be at Sunny Acres, once again the friendliest little farm in the county. Happy to welcome our panel, who's going to be talking about spiritual and physical healing. Jean Lauer is here. She runs Heart Wisdom, the Center for Compassionate Consciousness, an organization that nurtures the growth and development of compassion. She's worked as a spiritual director, a program director, and as a retreat leader. And we also welcome Jade Fang, who is a second-generation acupuncturist. She's certified in acupuncture, Chinese herbology, and Oriental medicine. She's operated a sliding scale acupuncture clinic in Winona since 2009. Thank you very much for being here. And I think Jean's going to be going first.
Well, good morning. What I want to reflect on this morning is a little bit about what I call healing encounters. And healing encounters invite two really significant elements. One is relationship, and the other is transformation to our moments of meeting. But before I get started in talking about that, the concepts of that, I want to tell a story. And it's one of my favorite stories from Rachel Naomi Raymond, you know, Kitchen Table Wisdom. I don't know if you know her, but she's a kind of an adjunctive medical provider. She's a physician, but she also kind of very, very open to integrative healing. And I love the stories. And this particular one is one that I really liked from way back. And it's a story about a container. I think in her book it's called The Container. And in this story, she speaks about a young man who had come into her practice and he had bone cancer. And his leg had to be removed at the hip because of that. And he was only 24 years old at the time. And so she started working with him, and he was extremely angry. He had a lot of bitterness, and he felt a deep sense of injustice and a very deep hatred for all those well people, because it seemed so very unfair to him that he had suffered this terrible, terrible loss so early in life. She worked with him through his grief and rage and pain, using painting, imagery, and deep psychotherapy. And after working with him for 2 years, finally there was a profound shift in him. He began, quote, coming out of himself. And at that time, he started noticing that other people, he started noticing in the newspapers that people were suffering, like he was suffering. And he just talked to her in therapy about that. And eventually, he said, maybe I'd like to visit those folks. And so she said, yeah, I think we can arrange that. And he started going to the hospital and visiting other people of all ages, I guess, who had also suffered losses. And so this contributed, too, to his coming out of himself. And so one day, it was a real hot day, and this was in Palo Alto, and he was wearing running shorts, so his false leg showed. And he entered a room where a woman had just lost two breasts, both breasts. And she was very depressed. And she wouldn't even look up at him. And she just really didn't want to have anybody's attention. She was really just into herself. And the nurses in the ward had left a radio playing because they were hoping maybe that would just sort of set a tone, cheer her up. Music is always healing. And so he wasn't sure, since he wasn't getting her attention, what to do. And so he decided to unstrap his leg, and he laid it aside. And then he started hopping around on one leg and dancing to the music and laughing and just you know, just really jiving with the moment. And she finally had to look up. So she looked up at him and in amazement, and she started giggling and laughing and said, "My God, if you can laugh, buddy, I guess I can sing." And then 1 year later, so this, you know, so I said that the therapist was working with him for 2 years, and then another year later, after he had started doing this kind of healing visiting, his therapist sat down and reviewed his file with him and reviewed the work that they had done together. And she opened his file, and there were some drawings that he had done early on. And one of the drawings was when she said to him early on, "Draw a picture of your body." And what he had drawn was a vase, and he had taken a black crayon and, you know, right across the center of the vase had, you know, drawn this crack. And he had just kind of repeatedly gone over that crack with that black crayon, because he was really, really in a lot of rage at the time and felt pretty broken and really felt like, I'll never be able to function as a human being again. I'll never be able to be the vase that can hold water. And so he looked at that picture and he said, "You know, I don't think that picture is complete." And so his therapist said, well, the doctor, I guess she wasn't really a therapist. She said to him, "Well, here's the box of crayons. Finish it." And so he took out a yellow crayon and he drew all yellow around the crack. And he said, "There, you see where it's broken? That is where the light comes through."
That's what?
The light comes through the cracks. And with that yellow crayon, he drew the light streaming through. So that's the piece that I really love. And I think it's true that light comes through our suffering. And it doesn't happen immediately, as you could see. The story took place over a long time. But one of my other favorite quotes is by Rumi, and he says pretty much the same thing. Let me get back to my outline here so I can find that quote and read it to you exactly the way Rumi says it. "The wound is the place where the light enters you." Oh, I think that's really true. When I've done work in hospitals, chaplaincy kind of work, and it was always in moments of crisis, I found that those were moments when people were open and receptive, because they felt so broken. And another hopeful thing that I think is really beautiful, and I wanted to show you, I'm very much an image person myself, is this picture of a ceramic vase from a Japanese craftsman in the 15th century. But what happened is they would fill the vase with gold lacquer in the cracked places, and it would become more valuable after it was cracked than before. And I think that's also true of our healing process. We become changed, transformed afterwards. So all of us are broken from time to time. We're human and we suffer. I don't think there's one person here who hasn't suffered something, some kind of wound. And we have to ask, what is it that breaks us? You know, why is it that we need healing and restoration? Why do we need to return to wholeness? When does it happen? And we experience it in illness, when we're sick. We experience it in aging, when our bodies are limited. We experience it in relationships, when we're suffering from conflicts and divisions. We experience it in war and in violence. And, you know, it's anything that separates us, breaks us apart. And so we long for that coming back together. And I believe that every encounter that we have, I mean, as casual or as intimate as it can be, is an invitation from life to heal each relationship. And not only the relationships, but the parts of ourselves that are also fragmented. We split ourselves in half so often when something is conflicted, or when we separate our body from our spirit. Or, you know, and we have this conflict, like my body just doesn't want to work this way anymore, but my spirit really wants to dance. Sometimes you see those pictures on Facebook of old people and the shadow shows them dancing or something. I love those. because we have to keep that spirit, you know, alive and young and whole. And so these relationships, these encounters invite us to enter into some sort of process to restore this wholeness. And today I volunteer. I work with youth in Winona in a restorative justice program. And this helps offenders learn about their own strengths, which, again, in the story, he eventually learned he had a strength to cheer up other people. And it helps them to separate their actions from their identity. You know, again, so to not identify with your brokenness, not identify with your illness, and to discover empathy for themselves and for one another and for the people that they've impacted. And empathy is it's not sympathy, which is, you know, I feel sorry, I can kind of relate, it's too bad. And it's not, you know, rejection, antipathy, where, you know, like, oh, I don't want to hear about that horrible thing. Empathy is entering into the other person's experience, trying through your imagination, through the opening and extension of your heart to attend to that thing that person is experiencing, to imagine yourself experiencing it, and then to be able to relate out of that. So I really find that working with these young people, we teach them empathy, and often they really need a lot of empathy. They may have hurt someone, but most of the time they're broken. And so I find myself really feeling very fulfilled by the healing encounters in my work with them. So healing encounters invite us through this intention to tenderly meet the other, whether it's a person or a part of ourselves. And those intentions begin in our hearts. The word tending or attending or intending or extending share a Latin origin. And it's the word tendere, which means stretch. And so we're invited to stretch ourselves, tenderly stretch ourselves. And tender also has that meaning of showing gentleness and concern. So we're invited to stretch ourselves to meet the other out of gentleness. And I am a spiritual director, and one of my favorite calls just to that ministry is a quote by John Youngblood, who's an Episcopal priest, who describes spiritual direction as an art of discerning that of God in another and helping that individual be true to this divine spark through a gentle process that he names tendering. So I love that. It calls me forward to that relational quality of both transformation and relationship that occurs in spiritual direction. But spiritual direction isn't about me telling someone how to live their lives. It's really more like Rachel Naomi Raymond's companioning a person through the journey of life. And all of us are capable of that. And so how is it that each of us can recognize and tender the divine spark within us and between us? We do it by growing in our capacity to bridge the awareness and the experience of ourselves as an I. You see the I in this picture? It's like we stand at a door or a wall and it opens and the light shines through. And there's a few steps here that we're called to cross or to walk upon. And each of these steps represents one of the things that we need to transform. And there's three. First one is our thoughts. The second one is our feelings. And the third one is our deeds. And you can think about the guy in the story, too, how he basically transformed those from those very dark moments into the much more light-filled moment. So what happens after we are able to transform those is we become, instead of a self-centered I, which we can be when we're selfish, but this I is suggesting that we are centered in the true self, not the selfish one, but the true self. So you know oneself, and you do come to know yourself through the thinking and the feeling and the doing. And once you're able to do that, then, just like the man in the story, you're able to see the other and meet the other, walk through that door, and the transformation occurs that makes you a chalice, a grail, a holy grail, you know, able to receive and to pour forth for yourself and for the other. And I love that you use have the chalice as their symbol, because I think it's just the most beautiful symbol of that thing that calls us to be able to say to the other, like Parsifal in the story of the Holy Grail, "Uncle, what is it that ails thee? What is it that ails thee?" Can you ask that of another person? That deep interest, just that question alone, brings presence to that other person and opens the door for empathy to occur. So I invite all of us to become that chalice. And when we do, I think it shifts into more of an image like this, which is, you know, like if I were to have a painting for my heart wisdom, this is what it would look like. And it's called Heart of Flame. It's by an artist called John Stolfo. He's an anthroposophical artist. He does probably a veil painting. So it sort of emerges out of layers of color. But I love this image because it looks like heart, it looks like a chalice, it looks like two hands kind of meeting each other, and it even looks like two people encountering each other. So again, this sort of points to those two elements I talked about earlier, relationship and transformation. Both are really significant in healing. And there's another anthroposophical man, Baruch Urieli. I'm sure nobody's heard about it. But he says, this quality of inner interest, which calls forth a kind of turning toward another, is to be found in those words I mentioned, "Uncle, what is it that ails thee?" And he says, whenever one human being is willing to take an active interest in the existence and destiny of another, to turn toward him, a glimmer of that question breaks through and enables the person asking the question to extend, there's that tending thing again, to extend part of his or her own being beyond their usual boundaries. So the other thing that happens in that eye and in that empathy, when we're able to become that chalice, is we actually are able to set aside our eye to extend ourselves. And then we come back, and conversation and communication is a dance of that, entering into the other and then letting go of yourself and then vice versa, and exchanging and attending to each other. So this is our invitation to the healing encounter, to meet all that life brings to our door. And we meet it by becoming this chalice. And those three ways that we can do it all begin with a kind of a centering in the heart space. So the heart space I see as a mediator between body, soul, and spirit. So it's kind of the place where that transformation occurs, where one can, using one's eye, consider what it is that one's thinking and how true it is or untrue it is. Consider what one's feeling, what messages the feelings are bringing, and consider the deeds, the influence of one's deeds in one's life. So centering in each of those, first with the heart and the breath, physically, and through body awareness and sensing and paying attention to aches and pains or positive feelings too. Through the soul, centering in open and authentic relationship, one to the other or to parts of oneself, welcoming, listening to those feelings. And through the spirit, which is centering in that beautiful heart wisdom, where we're united with the warmth and light of a cosmic and compassionate and creative force that we're capable of igniting, basically. And we do that when we choose freely out of our eye. That's the really significant piece about the eye. We don't do it because we're supposed to, or we're obligated, or someone shoulds on us. We do it because it comes out of us, just like in the story when I said he came out of himself. That's freedom. He did it because life moved through him, and that's what he was called to. So we're all called to that same kind of thing, to move out of a space of freedom, to use our eye to take a good look at ourselves and to enter into the life of the other. and to trust in this process that connects rather than separates or dominates. And I'd like to close now with a little poem that I wrote that helps us to remember what we can bring to the intentions of body, soul, and spirit as we center in our hearts, knowing that we are never alone, because spiritual resources are around us and within us. I am guided by light. Through clarity and mindfulness of thinking, I meet what is spiritually present. May the truth of my thoughts be illumined by light. I am companioned by love. Through compassion and empathy of feeling, I meet what is soulfully present. May the beauty of my words be warmed by light, by love. I am supported by life. Through intention and responsiveness in my actions, I meet what is physically present. May the goodness of my deeds be nurtured by life. And I did bring some handouts, and I'm going to put at the table at the end. One has got that poem that I just read, and the other is about a little book thing that I'm doing that I'd love to have some more participants in. Thank you.
I already introduced you, Jade, so
okay,
I'll just
so I can
next.
Go. Okay, wow. Well, that was great, Jean. You're really good at speaking. I'm really nervous because I'm really terrible at speaking. And I usually don't, like, speak much when I talk. So, like, when I talk, I usually just ask people questions. So, to me, like, yesterday I thought about this topic a little bit. So, this is my little attempt at speaking about it. So I think, you know, every one of us here has experienced, like Jean says, that kind of suffering, like, you know, that type of deep suffering that goes all the way deep into your soul. You know, when you're seeing, like, your child in pain, when you're watching a loved one die, when you're witnessing some sort of deep suffering that you're kind of helpless to stop. And that really touches us as humans, like, every single one of us. We've all been there, done that. So, like, the question really is, you know, how does one really heal from wounds like that? Besides with the passage of time. You know, the passage of time eases things. So sometimes you fall into these things and it's really, really hard, you know, to witness suffering, to be a part of suffering. It's really, really hard to come out of it. And so, like, kind of talking about the Chinese medicine perspective in the matter, like, really, I do Chinese medicine. And in Chinese medicine, there is no separation. Like, we don't separate the body from the soul at all. So, really, it addresses soul deep pain all the time, because, you know, there was this person that came in, this young guy. He was a soldier in a war, and he was very young. I mean, he was like 20 maybe, and he came in for some terrible pain in his back, and I treated him with acupuncture. And, you know, after the second treatment, he kind of came in. You know, most people don't really believe in this stuff when they come in. So, like, it's always the second time they come back that you get these really interesting tidbits from people. He said, wow, you know, he's in his 20s. He's not, like, a super expressive guy. He's not going to tell me about his soul deep change. But but he said, you know, I haven't been able to sleep without nightmares, you know, for, you know, at all. I've had terrible, terrible nightmares ever since I've been in war. And it's been the first time in like 4 years I've been able to sleep. And so it's like, why is that? You know, for me, acupuncture and Chinese medicine, I really enjoy it because it enables people to sit. And that's really important. It sounds very silly. But it's sitting, it's really important. It gives them the space for kind of having peace. it like allows, by allowing that space within yourself, it's like you start to contemplate a small piece of acceptance, you know, whether it is for themselves, whether it is for others, for things that happen to them, for things they've done, you know, for the incomprehensible suffering. You sometimes, when you're in suffering, you say like, why me, why this, why, like, this is so, and then you watch people kind of struggle with that. It's just so incomprehensible. So it gives them kind of that sitting space to just slowly come into this little piece of acceptance, and that's how you gradually transform. So like acupuncture in Chinese medicine, is they kind of use it in the military to treat a lot of post-traumatic stress, a lot of PTSD symptoms, and they're starting to use it in a lot of like disaster relief programs, because like after Hurricane Katrina, because that experience of being helpless and like trapped in a stadium with piles of people, no food, no water, no electricity, is really horrifying. So, you know, and that's because the body and soul is really connected. Okay. So, to not get too academic about the matter, but, you know, in Chinese medicine we have the system. So, like, for example, like, the liver is related to anger, the kidneys to this deep type of fear, the lung to this kind of grief, like this chest-wrenching grief, like when grief happens and it just explodes, the heart to excitement. I mean, it sounds like funny that you can be unbalanced in your excitement, but you've seen those people, like that kind of... like this kind of like, oh my God, I'm talking in front of people. but the spleen to worry, you know. So like every disease, every acupuncture point, it treats the symptoms and the underlying like soul part, the emotional part, whatever it's like stuck in that piece together. Like for example, like people come and you see those people that are just enmeshed in worry, right? You know, just can't stop worrying. You know, it doesn't help even at certain points. Like, oh, why don't you stop? It'll be okay. You know, because it's hard. It's hard when your, you know, soul's all enmeshed in it and you're worrying, well, this could happen and that could happen. You have this tendency to do that. And then, you know, they'll come in and present with like poor digestion and stomach pain, and all the insides are all wrapped up in this. So it's like kind of treating them for that. Or like pain, you know, for Chinese medicine is a lot about emotions and what's going on inside. It's like if somebody comes in with, you know, like that sciatica that shoots down the leg, you know, that's which channel it is. It could be like the liver, gallbladder channel. And there's like, sometimes it's like anger, resentment, you know, it's like what happened, you know, how this happened, or something just gets built up, pent up, and it comes out and expresses. You know, there's this really good book. It's kind of off topic. This is not even in my notes. And it's like when the body says no, and it's this body expression of like things you pent up in emotion. So for Chinese medicine, it's really always, always all tied. Like there isn't really anything that I do that isn't tied to, you know, the soul or emotions or people suffering, you know. It's always all tied. So, it's, my God, I'm still speaking. But, you know, and so it goes, I mean, this is all of Chinese medicine, if I can go on and on about this forever, but it's like, you know, the expression in the face, like, you know, how you tell suffering, like, by the way somebody walks, you can tell, like anger or pain or fear, you know, we all have that capability. We're all very intuitive. But it's this artificial separation that they've created, this divide between, like, as if there is a separation between the physical and the emotional and the spiritual. There is none. It's always constant, ever present. And then, like, you know, talking about heat or cold, or, you know, how that affects the body. So. Sorry, that was a terrible end. This just kind of dwindled off into nothingness, but But yeah, so that's pretty much it. Questions you can ask me. But yeah, in Chinese medicine, and what I see, like what I see of my role is giving people the space to gradually come into a little piece of acceptance of whatever they're going through, whatever suffering that is present, whatever suffering is that they see, you know. And you know, the pain is just an aspect of that, really. Yeah.
The soldier you mentioned, what part of the body did you treat, or what channel with nightmares?
Nightmares, like, I mean, Chinese medicine actually goes really specific into things. So, like, you know, if I was to get really in-depth about it, I could. But I just do this kind of general, like a very general balancing treatment. That helps actually a lot of people. Because, you know, it's like at some point, like when you've been suffering for that long, when you've had ongoing nightmares for that long, it's like affecting all your systems at once. Like in the beginning, like in the very beginning of the story, it could have just been fear or anger or injustice or, you know, but, you know, after 3 or 4 years, it's like going into everything. So I do this kind of all systems treatment, and then I see where they are on the nightmare side. You know, sometimes it's more anger in the end, or more fear, and then I work on that. Oh. Any other questions? Somebody save me.
So I'm just curious, you having grown up with, both of your parents were acupuncturists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you grew up with the concept of our mind, body, emotions, spirit, all one,
mm-hmm.
your whole life. So
yeah.
How do you think that that makes you maybe different than the rest of us who have grown up with everything separated? You know, I mean, how do you look at life differently, maybe?
Wow, that's a really huge question. I can answer that in 30 seconds. I mean, I think I just see things a little differently. Like I said at the end, there is no separation to me. Like if somebody is in pain, like if somebody's angry, I always ask them, where are you hurting? Because sometimes, like, it's just they're in pain somewhere. So, like, that's, you know, like, whenever you interact with somebody who's really difficult, I bet you've all never had to experience this before, somebody who was just being difficult. But, like, you know, sometimes, like, when I see somebody who's being really difficult, and I also don't like to interact with people who are difficult. But I, you know, to me, it's like, I just, you know, I look at them and I see, like, where they're in pain. I feel like, maybe this is just, like, I do this work all day, but, like, I'm like, oh, she's really, you know, irritated or irritable. Like, I, like, her neck is really hurting. Or, you know, to me, it just goes into something else. Or she's really anxious. She's really fearful. She's asking a million questions and da 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 da. But, like, you know, she, you know, her, like, you know, her back is really hurting or something. It just all ties. Like, so when somebody's difficult, I don't try to react in that same way. I don't feel like, oh, you know, they're just being mean to me because they're being mean. Like, I feel like, oh, you know, they're being mean because something's going on with them. So it gives me a lot of perspective. You know, I don't feel like, oh, this person's, you know, being really domineering because, you know, they just don't want to hear my views or don't care about me. I feel like, oh, this person's being really domineering because she's right in the middle of a migraine. Oh my God, please just sit down. So something like that. Any other questions?
Or do we have any questions for Jean?
Yeah.
Can you talk about your balance? You said you do sort of a balancing.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? What that is? Or?
Yeah, like, well, if, like, people come in and they don't necessarily have to have anything in particular wrong, you know, like you say about headaches or stomach pain or sinus pain or you're exhausted, yeah, do that. Or people come in and they say, like, I'm going through a divorce or my loved one's died, and I do that too. But, like, sometimes people just come in and they say, like, or, you know, sometimes people come in and feel like, I feel really stuck, you know, I'm an artist, and somehow I just feel like I'm not getting my creative spark. Or sometimes people just come in and they don't say anything. And so I do, like, this kind of general treatment, And it helps me, like, figure people out. Like, to me, it's always the process. Like you come in and I figure something else out. And every time I interact with the person, I figure out something more. So it's like with the depth of knowledge, I'm changing. So somebody comes in, I give them a general treatment, and how they react to that is how I gauge, like, what do I do next? Because, like, you know, if they have a general treatment and they said, oh, I sleep much better now, then I have a sense of, okay, you know, that's what it was bothering you. Or they say, you know, oh, you know, you don't even know what's wrong with you. This is really weird to say it like this, but sometimes people get used to this very normalized whatever it is, and, you know, they get a general treatment and they say, oh, I sleep much better, or, you know, I have much better energy, or my back feels better, and they didn't even know they were in pain or it bothered them or anything was the matter, or they just say, I feel happier, or... What did I joke about? Like, sometimes I feel like I do spousal maintenance. Like, people call in, like, it's been too long. I'm making my wife an appointment. Like, I'm sending my husband in. I tell him that he's coming for his back pain, but it's really not. Just like, that kind of thing.
Dwayne, John, a question for both of the guest speakers. If you could have a wish to change one thing about our society or people, what would you change? Or what would you hope you might do differently?
Oh, I guess what I would change is just that there would be more of an acceptance of more than matter. You know, spirit, like she's talking, you know, it's invisible. And as anything that's invisible, we don't give any credence to these days. We just sort of, you know, say, oh, that's wacky, that's weird. But because everything is so scientifically oriented and focused on evidence-based proof, we stop trusting our inner life. And that is a reality in and of itself that we need to trust, not to you know, basically leave behind or abandon, but to really listen to and to honor. So, yeah, I think that, you know, it's really sad that the world has gotten so scientific and so materialistically oriented that we don't trust ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, like, what I'd like to change, like, I mean, this is, she's got the big one, so I'm just, I think transitional periods are important to people. Like, in Chinese medicine or in China per se, like, transition periods are huge. Like, you know, like, the transition between, the transition between, like, you know, getting pregnant, having your child, and, like, the postpartum stuff, or the transitions between, like, you know, hitting menopause or adolescence, or, like, somebody dying. There's not a lot of transitioning in American society. Like, oh, somebody died. Okay. Feel better yet? Like, whoa. Like, you know, there's, in more traditional cultures, they allow time. You know, they understand, like, you know, it's like if you got a chronic illness, if you broke your leg, you know, they understand that you'll be upset, you'll be frustrated. And, you know, even if it's just something that happens to you, they allow time to transition in and transition out. Like here it's like, oh, you know, your dog died. You've had him for like 20 years, blah, 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 blah. Aren't you feeling better yet? Yet? You know, like, it's like, not yet. You know, give a little more time. And that's, I feel like, yeah, transitioning in this society is hard. You're not allowed very much time at all to adjust to anything.
We have time, I think, for one more question.
Well, I was just going to say, Elizabeth would laugh at me, the policies need to change. Like, we need more than 2 days for funeral leave or 6 weeks for maternity leave, right, or things like that. But I think those kinds of things drive what we have to, you know, that says about what we don't allow, and that would be one way of measuring a change in society if we could do that. Be more like Norway or Sweden.
Well, thank you very much. Please stand while we sing number 345 in the hymnal. Thank you. You may be seated. We will close by reading together number 694 in the hymnal. 694. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Please remain seated for silent meditation with music. Go in peace.
Thank you.